From the Spec Network, this is Fragmented, an Android developer podcast where we talk about building good software and becoming better Android developers. I'm Don Felker.
And I'm Kaushik Gopal.
Welcome to the show. This episode of Fragmented is brought to you by Flatiron School. Ah, fall is in the air, and kids aren't the only ones going back to school. At Flatiron School, the students are parents, musicians, travelers, and working professionals from all walks of life. It doesn't matter if you're an entrepreneur running your own business, a marketer diving deep into user behavior, or just someone who loves design. It's time to level up your creative chops. You can design your future by learning UI and UX design at Flatiron School in just 24 weeks at one of their global WeWork campuses or even online. Their committed instructors have both industry and teaching experience and are backed by their master's teaching and learning experience designers to ensure that you get the best possible support. Now, while in school, you'll work on client projects and graduate with a portfolio of real client work. This will enable you to change careers with confidence with one-on-one support from their dedicated career coaches and with a money-back guarantee. Complete details about Flatiron School, you can go to flatironschool.com/terms. Again, that's flatironschool.com/terms. Join the community of changemakers at Flatiron School at flatironschool.com/fragmented. Again, if you're interested, check out flatironschool.com/fragmented.
Hey, folks. I am really excited to share a very new sponsor for this week. So the sponsor for this week is Vettery. Vettery is an online hiring marketplace that is changing the way people hire and get hired. Now, you might ask, well, I mean, I've heard of other similar companies like this. What's so different about them? Well, for starters, the access is exclusive. Once you're live on their marketplace, top employers can view your profile and extend interview requests via email. The other good thing about them is they're also specialized in the tech space. So the kind of jobs and positions that you'll see are the ones that you probably have the most context around. So software developers, data scientists, product managers, etc. You can also do things like set preferences for your desired location. And also, like, if you are someone who's looking to find other like engineers and other like great people to work with, you can set like all kinds of different tweaks, like years of experience, top skills, professional background, and a whole bunch of other things. They also have like about 20,000 companies that they partner with on this platform. So that's amazing. It ranges from like innovative startups to, you know, the Fortune 500 firms. So, and they're also across US, Canada, and the UK. Now, here's the best thing. They are absolutely free to join. So you can go and sign up on vettery.com/fragmented. Vettery is kind of hard to pronounce in audio, but it's actually easy to type. So I'll just like spell it out. It's V-E-T-T-E-R-Y. So that's vettery.com/fragmented. And if you accept a job through Vettery, you get a $300 bonus on top of that. So again, if you can go to the link vettery.com/fragmented and try them out, then it helps support the show. And also they'll know you came from us and they'll know that you're interested in a service like this. Anyways, my thanks to Vettery for sponsoring this show. In today's episode, I'd like to talk about this really interesting concept or question that came up again for me. In a world of functional programming where everything is pure input and output and side effects are avoided, how does one actually do any I/O operation? I love this question because in many ways it helps cement the fundamentals and also forces you to confront this trade-off between pragmatism and theoretical purity, so to speak. So to better understand the problem or question, I've found two ways of framing this question to be really useful. Even though I did have the same question, I just want to make it clear, I did not come up with these two ways of framing the question. I found them on Stack Overflow and an online blog post, all of which I'll make sure to throw into the show notes. Okay, so I'm going to pose this question again in two ways. First way is like the pure theoretical problem. I'll just make that statement. And the other is using an analogy, which I also thought was like interesting to sort of really push the boundaries on this question. So let's start with the theory. In the world of functional programming, a central concept is that the result of a function is determined by its input and only by its input, right? So there shouldn't be any side effects, so to speak. The question then is, if a function makes changes only within its local environment or is, like, you know, is scoped within its own body and then returns the result, how do you interact with a database or like a file system or any other repository, right? So within that function or within that body, if you need access to the database or make a network request or do anything with the repository, you are by definition then stepping out of the scope of that function and trying to mutate or change state outside of the scope of that function, right? Because by pure functional programming definitions, accessing the database would be the equivalent of accessing some global mutable state. And this global mutable state, of course, is, you know, in the case of a database operation, your local database. So that's one way to pose this problem, right? So it brings in a dilemma. Like if I really want to stick to pure functional programming, I can almost never do an IO operation, so it seems. The other way that this question can be posed is using a sort of like analogy, which I really like. Mutation is a very natural way to model things. Say you're a game developer, right? And you're building your first game, but you're all excited and you think, oh, I want to do this using the concepts of like functional programming. Well, that's great. Think about this example. Say you fire a bullet with your machine gun in this game, you know, at an alien or some bad person. When the bullet actually hits the alien, you don't necessarily mentally model that as, okay, destroy this alien object and then construct a new alien object with fewer life points, right? And life points being like a property on this object called alien. You simply model that as a mutation. So I take that existing alien object and I just like decrease the life points, right? I don't basically destroy that object, recreate a new alien object with lower number of life points. It's funny to think that every time you fire a machine gun, you basically destroy the old object and you reconstruct a new one with different properties. It sort of seems counterintuitive to the way you would naturally model this problem, right? And in the end, always you want to naturally model problems because then it's just easier to maintain and all the host of other like natural things that come with making this simpler. By the way, if you haven't seen the movie The Prestige, I highly recommend it, and you'll probably know why after you see the movie. Anyways, I hope posing that problem in those two ways makes it clear what the issue is with, you know, functional programming and trying to use that in your app development. Pure functional programming can seem unnatural when we want to model some very basic common use cases like IO operations, you know, database calls, network requests, just storing state in general. So what gives here? How am I supposed to think about this and address this? Because these are common use cases. I'm going to have to do these when building my app. And in general, the way things are swaying today, everyone is moving towards functional programming, at least, or adhering to concepts of functional programming or trying to adopt these as much as possible. Talk to any seasoned developer today and they'll almost always recommend that you make an object immutable. Mutating state tends to be problematic, right? Like you typically want everything to be immutable. In a recent talk I gave, I just posed why immutable things are good is you want assurance that the object that you have doesn't change underneath you, right? Think about if you bought your friend a brand new TV for their birthday, but secretly kept a hold of the remote, and every time they were watching TV, kept changing the channel underneath them like a jerk. You know, that doesn't really play well. So that's almost like the problem with mutation. Like when you have an object, and if there's like a background operation or something underneath that changes that object underneath you, then it becomes unpredictable. Right. So in general, everyone knows like immutability is a virtue that we all strive to. But then this again begs the question, how does one do any IO work in that case? Right. Because by definition, IO work, especially things like persisting to a local database, need mutation. By the way, if you want to find out more about functional programming or want to get a recap, if the concept of functional programming is a little new to you, we've actually done a bunch of episodes now. There's the first one we did, episode 83. This is with Anoop, where he talks about some of the basics of functional programming. That's a very good episode. Then we talked to like the Aero team. The Aero team, like they're probably some of like the they lead the frontier in like functional programming today, at least in the Android world, with the AeroKT library. Episodes 120 and 121, we talked to them about like functional programming, and I thought those were also like great episodes. Okay, that being said, I ran into this problem too recently with the whole unidirectional state flow pattern that I've been talking about for some time now. Actually, let me do a quick recap there. So the way that works is you try to model your entire UI as a function. So you model UI events as these things called view events. They're converted to view results. Those are then converted to view state and view effects, and those are channeled as the output outside the view model. The view events to view results part is actually where things tend to get interesting with this problem that we're talking about today, because that is typically where you do business logic. So network calls, database calls, all of those happen at that point where you're converting view events to view results. The whole pattern models the UI, like I said, as a single function, and the problem becomes very apparent there again. If you treat the view events as input and view state as output, you'll run into a dilemma where if I need to do a database operation and I'm trying to model this entire thing as a function, again, there's a nuance. I said model it as a function. I didn't necessarily say model it as a pure function. But as far as possible, you want to try to model it as a pure function. But that won't really be possible if you do any database operations. I gave a talk about this again. I'll throw in like my speaker deck in the show notes. The video is not out. It should be coming out in December. When that comes out, I'll make sure to tweet that out as well. But if you also prefer like an audio medium, Don and I have talked about this in detail in episodes 148 and 151. Don't worry, all of this, I'll throw all of these in the show notes. So if folks are curious, they can quickly click these links and get there. Okay, so at this point, you should definitely have a good idea about this whole problem. I've tried to add a lot of context and color around this. What's the solution now? It's going to sound a little anticlimactic, but the answer is just be pragmatic. You know, while functional purity is ideal, there are times when that purity is just not worth it. Like, you just have to be pragmatic, right? Instead, what you should do is when you run into these situations where you need to mutate state or perform these IO operations, you should abstract away the possibilities of mutating that data from as many boundaries as possible. So as best as you can, you want to like encapsulate that within this thing that makes mutating the state very safe. So what's an example of that? Repository patterns, right? Like when you talk about repository patterns, that's one way I do it. I have a single function that takes in the mutation of the state and it actually returns an observable. If I want to access the state from the database, I actually have an observable that returns this. I'm stressing observable here because for those who are familiar with RxJava, typically observables are immutable. So the data that comes in that stream of observables, you can mutate it as much as you want, but nothing will happen, right? Because the source is immutable. And of course, if I'm actually mutating state, if I'm doing like an update operation, I also actually return like a completable or something from those, just an aside. So in this way, I try to minimize the way things can go wrong with mutation, but in many ways, I still have to allow it, right? Network operations are also like kind of a way to think about this. For example, if you use retrofit and like an observable, you're accessing state. You're not necessarily like changing state, so to speak. Well, not necessarily, depends on what your network request call does, but that's what lands up happening, right? You need these objects that help with the mutation of state and control it. There are like some obvious things. For example, if the state is actually being held inside that object for some reason, make that private, right? Like make it almost impossible to like directly access that from outside of this abstraction of this object. If you look at the Stack Overflow answer, this is the Stack Overflow question initially that was posed that I found online when doing some of the research for this episode. The answer I thought was also like very good. And it basically suggests the same things. They have 3 points, right? Actually 2 points. One is be pragmatic, not a purist. The second is provide built-ins that allow impure code and side effects. And lastly, use these as little as possible. So really, that's basically what they're suggesting. It maps almost one-to-one to what I just recommended. And in many ways, that should like solve your problem as you build mobile apps on Android, right? You do allow mutations, but you control the way you do those. And if you think about the unidirectional state flow thing that I talk about, you almost have like this chain going on, like this stream, as you model the entire UI as a function. perform those IO operations, but do them in a safe way and minimize like how many of these are happening. Now, all this being said, I was still pretty curious because, you see, there exists legitimate functional reactive programming languages, and I mean like legit ones like Haskell, right? And they go to the extent of respecting functional purity. And people build real-world applications with these languages. So I was genuinely curious, how do people do this, right? How are they able to pull off IO operations while all the same while respecting functional purity? I'm going to do like a sort of gross approximation of how they do this. Also, this is the audio medium, so it tends to be a little difficult. And I'm no Haskell expert here. So obviously, this is all only what I've read. I've not actually used Haskell in real life for building any real apps. So the way it's implemented is in your function, just before you perform the mutation necessary for like, say, something like an IO operation, Haskell actually sort of freezes the state of the world and also sends that as a parameter to the function. So say I have like a function that says update state, you know, update alien life points, it also basically freezes the whole state of the game and passes that in addition as a parameter. And then now this becomes easy, right? Because now everything is still very well scoped. And then you have a return operation that like sends the modified state that you can then use. Now, this is like, again, a very like, this is a simplification of what happens. And it's actually a very commonly used metaphor to sort of like make you help understand how they do it. So before you email or tweet at me, let me tell you, actually, I'm not going to try to explain exactly what happens, but this is, again, I'm reading this from like the excerpt that I noticed. Haskell actually has a pretty sophisticated type system. So it's not as simple as just freezing the state of the world and sending that in your function. It actually uses the type system and ensures that impure functions, so like functions where you like have side effects, etc., which are not pure, they're marked as such and apparently executed in a very well-defined order. So the passing the state of the universe metaphor is used more like an implementation of this, but conceptually it actually doesn't hold up if you really like examine Haskell, apparently, again, because I've not used Haskell. That last part, again, was from Stack Overflow. And again, I would encourage everyone to look at like the show notes this time and read the links that I'm posting, because when you read all of these together, it really cements the idea and like it sort of like gives you a good grasp of how you should address this problem. Anyways, I hope you enjoyed this problem and this episode, and it helps you to start thinking more about functional purity and pragmatism and how you can like use the best of both of these worlds. I have a GitHub repository called Movies USF. I actually created both Android and iOS apps, and the only reason I'm pointing this is because there is going to be a feature that I'm in the progress of building called like genre picker. It's basically a list of checkboxes and you can pick the preferred genres. Honestly, from the app's perspective, it was like, it doesn't really have any meaningful functionality. The reason I'm building this feature is because it actually reflects a very common use case that you might run into, which is if you select the checkboxes, there's like functionality that's run behind this, right? So there's like this grappling with different states. There is the local database, which holds your favorite genres. And then there's this screen with a list of checkboxes having your genres pre-selected, but you can change these, right? So you can pick other checkboxes and then change your preferred genres. So there's like some interesting functionality there. So if you pick any new genre, then like the save button pops up. But then if you land up like checking and unchecking the checkboxes to reach a state which reflects the same as what is in your database, then the save button is hidden, right? Then you want to at least select one genre checkbox. So it's a very interesting example because it grapples with the state of what you see in the view, the user selection state, and what is held in the database. And the way I sort of deal with this is I actually take the user selection state and also abstract that. So I also treat that almost like a in tandem with the repository. Again, it's a little tricky to explain this over the audio medium, but stay tuned. Obviously, it's taking me some time because it's like a side project. But if you're curious about how I'm handling this, just, you know, let us know in the comments or just tweet at me and I'll try to like, you know, expedite this branch and try to get it shipped as quickly as possible.
Anyway, hope you found this episode useful. I will make sure to add all the links in the show notes for all the resources that I had. There's also this interesting blog post, this blog called Flying Frog Blog, which has a very nice explanation of this concept. Thank you all so much for listening, and I will catch you in the next episode.
Flatiron School is a sponsor of Fragmented. At Flatiron School, you learn how the future is being built so that you can change anything, starting with a new career in UX and UI design. To learn more, you can go to flatironschool.com/fragmented. Again, that's flatironschool.com/fragmented.
I also want to take a moment and thank our sponsor for this show, Vettery. Vettery is an online hiring marketplace that is changing the way people hire and get hired. You can go to vettery.com/fragmented, and if you accept a job through them, you'll get an additional $300 bonus. So it's an additional offer. It's hard to say that on audio, the domain name, so I'm going to make sure I spell it out. It's vettery.com. So it's vettery.com/fragmented. Do make sure you put the /fragmented in so that they know you came from us. Thank you so much, Vettery, for sponsoring today's show.
That's it for the show, folks. Fragmented is hosted by Don Felker and me, Kaushik Gopal. We edit and produce all the episodes here on Fragmented. Sarah the Amazing Jackson from the Spec Network helps with production assistance and wraps our final mix. Our theme and ad music is by the national recording artist Blueprint from Weightless Recordings. You can find more Fragmented episodes at fragmentedpodcast.com. Thanks for listening, and we will catch you in the next episode.